All right. Welcome to the equipment presentation. My name is Mike South. We're going to be talking about the equipment mostly that we manufacture and some more of the general equipment that we have. And most of our equipment is targeted for domes below 100 foot. That's kind of a general between 100 foot and 8, you know. Monolithics equipment building philosophy. These are some of the things we're going to go over. Equipment needed to build monolithic domes. We're going to go just generally over some of that stuff. And we're going to go over the monolithic mixer, some of our peristaltic concrete pumps, our Paxos polar scaffold, then the monolithic marketplace, and then we'll see if we get some time for some questions and answers. Monolithic building philosophy, stay light and nimble. We really try to keep our stuff simple. Keep it simple, stupid, right? That's what the saying is. We try to keep it to where we can load all of our stuff on one truck, one trailer, keep our crew in the truck, and just go to the job site and keep our overhead down and our, you know, keep our costs down. But it also increases our speed and our ability to do different kinds of jobs. This is some of the pictures of one of our trucks that we have loaded. This is a picture of our Paxos scaffold that we're going to go over some more. This scaffold is incredibly compact. You know, we can put that whole scaffold almost in the back of a truck. But yet, we can go up and build, well, we built an 88-foot dome with one just last month.
You can set that up in an afternoon?
Yep. The biggest one we did, you know, the one we did last month, it took us 6 hours to build it. And this is kind of a job we were going to do. You can see our scaffolds taken apart right there. You know, the alternative scaffold methods that you could use would be to either put some scaffolds with some wheels and haul it around inside of there, which is almost impossible when you start spraying concrete. Or you could rent some kind of scissor lift thing that would cost you a lot of money and would still be a real pain to use. A 32-footer, you can squeeze it in there. But it's almost like you don't need it, you know. It would depend on the height. But the 32 by 12-foot domes we've been building, you know, that's, you can just about spray the whole thing from the ground, you know, at 12-foot. Okay, dome of building equipment that you need. Airform attaching tools, like hammer drills, drills and stuff. We're going to go over some of this stuff. Inflators, airlocks, rebar tools. Let's just get into this here. This is showing some of the tie-down straps. I had a hard time finding some pictures here. These metal galvanized bands that we use for attaching the airform. Man, you cannot see that hammer drill. I got some more straps here. I thought I had a more close-up picture of some straps. Attaching the airform, that's kind of a skill set, you know, that take some time to get used to. We're going to just kind of go over the bands. We're going to just kind of skip over it. Inflators. We sell a couple different kinds of inflators. For monolithic domes, we sell an F-15 and the SC-3. The SC-3 is this one that you're seeing here. It's a 3-horsepower motor. And this thing, you could easily build a 100-foot dome with one of those, easily. And most of the time, we run with two for the big domes. One just in case, you know, if one died or something in the middle of the job. And then also at night, we'll put one on a generator at night so we can sleep easy, knowing that even if the power goes out, the other one will take up the slack.
How much for the smaller domes?
Yeah, there's a 1.5-horsepower one we're going to go over in just a second. The little door here that you can see, I don't know if you guys have seen this, there's a little door right here. It's got the weights on it. That is what helps us regulate pressure. Right now, that thing is totally closed, which is not normal. It looks like they're trying to inflate the dome for the first time, you know. But what happens is that door, when you get those weights on there right, it'll float open a little bit so that it has a constant pressure of 2 inches of water column pressure is what we measure it as. But what happens, you put a little more weight in there and it ups the pressure in the dome a little bit. The good thing about this system is that if I go in the back of the dome and cut a hole in it to give some more ventilation, and that door will close just a little bit, and I'll always have 2 inches of pressure. Also, for instance, after you inflate the dome and you go to foam it, a lot of times you'll seal a lot of the holes, and that door will just open a little bit more. So it's a really nice safeguard that you don't have to worry about it. Another safeguard that we have in our fans, and again, you can't see it very well, dang it, is that they have some backdraft doors, so that if the for some reason the fan does die, someone trips a breaker or someone trips over the cord, and the air can't go back out of the fan, the doors will shut, and the air can't go back through it. So there's a lot of thought put into those fans. Now this is the smaller one that we call it the F-15, right? It's a 1.5 horsepower inflator. This is an excellent fan for building 32 footers. You could get two of them and build a 40 footer with it really easily. We prefer the bigger ones in Texas because it's so stinking hot all the time that we like to have lots of air going through the dome. We'll cut big holes in the back so the air goes in and pushes the nasty air out, especially when we're foaming. You know, we like to have a lot of air movement. This is one of our little tiny EcoShell inflators. It's made with a vacuum motor pump, I guess, I don't know. But it's built for really high pressure. Not a lot of volume, but really high pressure. The EcoShells, we run those about 6 or 7 inches of water column pressure because we're standing on the outside and pouring the concrete on the outside. And you get into bigger EcoShells, we have the double EcoShell inflator, which has two of those motors in it, and they have backdraft sensors, and on the right you can see there's some dials for controlling the pressure. Now these fans are the SC5s. You don't see there on our website, but you could call and order them. But those are 5 horsepower motors on it. These were used to build those big domes in Birmingham, Alabama. This picture is in here to show the airlock. Like I said, I had a hard time finding some good pictures, but the airlock is a really important tool. You know, and we sell airlock kits for helping build those. You can build yourself. I put a picture of my foam machine in here because I just think it's so pretty. We got a brand new foam machine, and you guys will probably contract your foaming out, but those are nice machines. Now this is something that's relatively new. It's a hitch rebar bender. It slides in your 2-inch receiver hitch. When we went and built the Birmingham domes, we sold our bender to
South Industries.
And we went to go buy another one, and they're about $3,000, the electric one that would bend the rebar for us, which is a little bit too much more money than we wanted to spend. So you guys know my dad, he wanted to just go out there and build one himself, you know, save a dollar. And so we started talking about how to do it, and this is eventually what we came up with. It's amazingly versatile. We used it on that job and when we built Jack Boyd's house in Iowa. I know it's on the website. We bent all the steel with that thing, and you could had a guy bending steel with that just as fast as they could bend it with those really high-powered fancy ones. The 3 bolts are, like if you bend number 3 or number 4, it's not always going to be exactly the same. You have to come just a little bit past 90 degrees. Because it always has a little bit of spring back, you know. So depending on if you're doing 3s or 4s or 2 number 3s, like my guys always bend 2 at a time, you know, then you can choose which bolt you want it to stop at. Okay, here's some of our rebar hangers. Rebar hangers are applied during the middle of the foaming process. And can't live without them. Now this is a hydraulic rebar shear. We sell this on our website now also, but we've been using it for years. They are extremely nice. They cut the rebar just so fast and easy, and they're sparkless, which is good when you're inside with the foam, the polyurethane foam. Keeping the sparks away from the foam is a good idea. Here's a little bit closer picture of it. These things, they're just machines. You can't break them. They'll last forever. We had to replace the blades after like 3 years. There's a Hickey bar. We're into some of our rebar tools. Hickey bar is a handheld rebar bender. A little bit closer picture of it right there. And then we're into the Paxis scaffold. Oh, actually, I think that was supposed to be rebar. My bad. Okay. We bought a mixer from a company called Portamix years back. And it was the best mixer we ever had. You know, we could mix concrete. We didn't have to shovel it into the barrel mixer. I spent a lot of summers shoveling sand, you know, when I was a kid. And so we bought one of those. And then, like, about 6 months later, they went out of business. So we started making our own. And then about a couple years after that, they went back in business. I think it was because we started selling a bunch of them. But this thing, you can mix about 4 to 5 yards an hour if you're really good. And you think about it, 4 yards an hour is a lot of concrete. We use these things to build domes that were like a 90-foot dome in San Antonio one time we built with these. Because the concrete company said, well, if you're not doing 100 yards a day, we don't want to mess with you, you know. So it's like, all right, well, we got two of those and two Bobcats, and it was fun, man. We mixed a lot of mud with those things. And the good thing about this is we can start when we want and we finish when we want, and there's no concrete. The concrete truck companies are really hard to deal with, you know. They'll get there when they get there, and we are small animals to them, you know. We do 20 or 30 yards a day. It's not very much to them, you know. It's a picture of it scooping up the sand again. No shovels. Yippee. It's a picture of the guys dumping the concrete bags into it. Just kind of zoom through these. By the way, I put a PDF of this slideshow on our website, so you guys can go back and look at the pictures. Extremely nice mixture. There's a picture of it dumping into one of our pumps. And we've poured a lot of floors and sidewalks and post holes with it too. I didn't get a good picture of it, but on the side there's a little side door that opens up and you can pour post holes and stuff with it also. Now we're into our pumps. The GHP 1500. The GHP stands for gas hydraulic powered. We also sell some EHPs, which are electric hydraulic powered, but we've kind of phased them out now because the gas powered ones are so much more powerful. They got a little bit more oomph than the electric ones did. They all have Honda motors, which, you know, you can't break those things. We've been developing these pumps for years and years and years, and we're constantly making changes on them to make them better and better and better. This pump right here is, we built 50-foot domes with this pump very easily, and some of the advantages of peristaltic pumps over piston pumps, let's go over this a little bit, is piston pumps are great. You know, they have these huge $60,000 piston pumps you can go and buy, and they'll pump a lot of mud, you know, but a lot more than is really needed for spraying monolithic domes unless you get into the huge domes, you know, some of these like Andrew's building. Peristaltic pumps have the advantage of they're super simple. Again, with our motto is keep it simple, right? When this thing breaks, all I do is pull out that peristaltic hose, put in a new one, and it's a brand new pump again. You know, there's no seals, nothing like that. Piston pumps are messy. I don't know if you guys have ever messed with them, but when it's time to clean them out, you got to break open the hopper, and they just make a huge mess. These are very clean. When it's time to clean these things out, you just clean off the hopper, throw a sponge in the hole, and the sponge pushes all the mud out the hose, and you're done. Piston pumps also have a lot of electronics in it. You know, they're all hydraulic, and they've got different movements going on. They've got two pistons. They've got, you know, a little swing thing in the bottom and augers. And if one of those electric solenoids goes out, you're dead in the water. These things are very simple and very easy to keep going. Got some more pictures of it. That's a question from Melinda.
1,000, basically 1,000 pounds with a vibrating screen.
I don't have the vibrating screen in here, dang it.
Oh, but they'll see it tomorrow. I won't leave. Yeah, you do.
There's one. The vibrating screen is another thing that we developed. For a long time, we would screen our sand before we mix it, or we'd build makeshift screens that would go on top of the pump, you know. Nothing compared to this thing. That screen will almost hold a whole bucket load out of the mixer. And then keeping the rocks out of the mix is a big deal. It keeps us moving.
But that's in the rest of the
That's in the resting position. That's right. It's got little feet that you just throw it up and it just hangs off the side of the pump. And when you need it, you just pulls down over it. Okay, the GHP 2000 is the big brother to the inch and a half pump, you know. 6 yards an hour is what we've clocked that thing at when we're pumping really good with some good concrete. It's got a 20 horsepower Honda motor on it. This pump will pump a lot of concrete. It's got the same advantages as the other one, just a lot more volume. One thing I will say about the bigger pumps is it seems to that you can pump a lot more concrete through the hoses. It seems to me like the bigger the parasolic hose is, the longer it lasts. Like you'll get about 40, 50 yards out of the inch and a half. This one you'll get 60, 70, 75 yards out of it. And I've got some pictures of a peristaltic hose inside of there. In case I skipped over that, peristaltic hose, a peristaltic pump is kind of what they call it, a squeeze pump also. Basically, you have a roller that just squeezes the concrete out of the hose. So the hose has to be extremely elastic, you know. After it's squeezed, it has to open up again. So we're starting to sell some really good peristaltic pumps. The GHP 2500, now we're getting into big pumps. You know, this is our 2.5-inch model. Pumps 10 to 12 yards an hour, depending on concrete mix. And concrete mix, we could go on, we could have a whole other session about that. But if you have a good concrete mix, this thing will pump 10 to 12 yards an hour. Really good for domes up to 150. Good for, that thing is good for pumping lots of large jobs. Like we core fill blocks with it, and we've pumped bleachers. You know, we pour a lot of bleachers in some of our big gymnasiums, and when it's time to pump a lot of concrete, this thing is the pump to use. This one has quite a bit larger carousel than the other two, which gives us a little bit more length on our hose and gives us a little bit bigger stroke. It's got other differences. It has three wheels instead of just the two for squeezing out the hose. Got our same Honda motor on it. It's the biggest gas motor we could find. After this, you go to diesel, which then you also go to three times the price. So we're trying to keep these kind of economic, you know, trying to keep them within people's price range, but still get as much power as we can out of it. Last 2 years, we've gone to a direct drive system. Before, we had a little hydraulic motor that had a chain that would go to a big sprocket inside the carousel and do all chains and sprockets. You know, there's a lot of room for messing up there. And the newer models have a direct drive where the shaft just goes straight through the center of the carousel and there's no chains or sprockets to go through. And it's added a lot more power and a lot more, they're a lot longer lasting, you know, a lot less problems. Okay, now we're into our Paxis scaffold. This is probably the most useful piece of equipment we make. You know, if you try to build a dome without one of these scaffolds, then you're playing games. This one right here, I think, was about a 45. Oh, no, that's Jack Boyd's house. It's like 40, 45, something like that. This is that dome in Patch Hog, New York. That, what's it called? Bandshell. This is Javier Figueroa's house there in Milford, Texas, not too far away from where we live. And that's a 32 by 12. See, we got that, we squeezed that scaffold in there. This is a dome in New Mexico. You see how tall that puppy is? Now this is using our old style, and that thing was kind of wobbly, but it still works pretty good once you get used to the dance you got to do up there. And what we've done is this year we've gone from, 6.5 foot wide to a 10 foot wide scaffold base. And we haven't got them on our website yet, but we are going to start selling them. This is some of the pictures of the new scaffold. I think we're going to start selling them in either width, you know. You can buy them in 6.5 foot wide widths, or you can buy them in... The biggest thing that we've done to this scaffold is we've changed the beams a little bit to where they're not like a telescopic beam. They're more like beams that have a male end on it. So you can just buy 5 beams long, or you can go 6 or 7 or 8, you know. You can just... The length is variable, you know. And we've also started using the 10-foot back axles and 10-foot gooser bars so we can get the really wide scaffolds. This is a 10-foot one right here. The other new thing we've done with the Paxa scaffold is we've changed it to a three-phase motor with a single-phase to three-phase converter, which allows us to use a variable speeds. This is that inverter here. And this thing is really slick. It's allowing us to be able to tell the scaffold how fast to accelerate so that when you shut it off, it doesn't just stop. You know, it slows to a stop. It keeps it safe when we're doing bigger scaffolds, you know. So we're not stopping suddenly. It's a picture of the new controller. It has the speed control on the top so that, again, when we get a lot bigger scaffolds, you know, the speed of spraying is about the same, but when you're spraying on the end of the scaffold, it's going a lot faster than if you're sitting in the middle. So we needed that speed adjustment. And again, this is the scaffold that we took to build that 88-foot dome, and it fit all that scaffold fit on that trailer real easy. And it probably weighed 5,000 or 6,000 pounds. So it's not real heavy, it's easy to transport, and you can build a really big structure with it. Here's some pictures of that 88-foot dome we built. It's really hard to show pictures of the inside of domes when you're being sprayed in concrete. You see how big that one is? That is a big scaffold, and it works great. It's kind of hard to show on a picture how it feels, but when you get up there on that middle section, that is a huge working area, and it does not scare you. It does not wobble like some of those other earlier ones did. We didn't on this one. We wished we would have. Yeah. It was a little heavy. It started making little ditches there. Yeah. So that one is still, it's just a 1.5 horsepower motor, but we've got a different gearbox. And then also that when we went to the three-phase motor, we were able to push a little bit more power to it. You know, it changes the speed by hertz. So normal hertz is 60 hertz, but we were able to put like 100 hertz to it, which makes it a little bit powerful and more speedy. And then I wanted to hit real quick on the marketplace. You know, we've got the marketplace online. When someone calls me and they say, how much does this cost? I have to pull up my own website to check it. This thing has all of the stuff down to the little nozzle cap, you know, to fix your nozzle. And we are constantly upgrading this thing. Another thing that I wanted to hit on is that we are also changing the way our hoses hook together. I don't know if any of you guys currently have them, but we're changing from the Victaulic ends to the heavy-duty ends. The heavy-duty ends are a lot stronger, a lot safer. They've got raised bevels that just really lock the hoses together. And it's actually kind of what OSHA is demanding nowadays. Well, we went through it faster than I thought we would. Yep, on our website, we have all the stuff to change them. We've got weld-ons for the existing, or if you have a threaded hose, you know, you can just thread them on there. And so now it's time for questions, guys. I've got lots of pictures on my computer. You guys have any questions about these pumps? Any of this equipment? No questions. It's a pretty machine, you know. It won't be pretty for very long. As soon as that seal breaks and shoots foam all over inside of the trailer, it'll be back to normal. I wish I had a picture of the one we had before that. The one we had there before that was probably as old as I am. They finally just discontinued it, wouldn't sell parts for it anymore. We just got forced into buying a new one. My dad always said the foaming business was the one business that could make a grown man just sit down and cry, because he can't get the stupid machine to work. And I know I've experienced that a lot of times. Foam equipment is something I would not recommend buying. Just hire it out. It's expensive, yeah. That machine right there cost us about $17,000. Yeah, we barely use ours enough. I mean, if you buy a foam equipment, you better plan on spraying foam. If Because the foam machine is only one part of it. You know, you have the foam machine, then you have to have an air compressor, barrel pumps, and the hoses are like $1,800 for 50 foot. And the foam equipment has cost a lot of money.
Talk a little bit about spraying.
About spraying polyurethane? Well, let's talk about polyurethane for a little bit. That spraying polyurethane is a very specialized industry. You know, it takes a trained eye to know when the foam is setting up right and when it's not. Foam has to be 120 degrees coming out the nozzle. Both chemicals have to be at the equal pressure coming out at the exact same time, and if they don't, it'll make your dome look like crap. We sell monolithic primer, is what we call it, monoform primer. And that stuff is a miracle stuff. You spray it on the inside of your airform before you spray the foam, and it does a couple things. Number one, it's real sticky, so it kind of helps the foam stick to it, which doesn't really need help a lot unless there's like dirt or debris on the airform. But the one thing it does more than anything is it locks the plasticizers into that fabric. A lot of the problem what we're learning is that fabric has the plasticizers in there and they'll outgas over years. That's why that airform only has about a 10-year life on it, because the PVC, the chemicals inside there, the plasticizer, right, is outgassing. And also it goes in. And so when it goes in, it's creating bubbles. I know every once in a while you'll see it. On my house, I got bubbles all over the place. I think that was a different issue. But bubbles can be real ugly, you know. And this thing really stops the bubbles. Another thing about spraying foam is if you get a cowboy in there that just goes in there and sprays a bunch of foam, he can wrinkle that airform. When you spray foam on a piece of plastic on the ground, the edges curl up. Well, the center, it just kind of curls. So if you do a lot of foaming on the inside, it'll do that same thing. It'll kind of make some lines in there. So if you hire foamers to do it, you can instruct them. You can have them call me. I'd love to talk to them. But we always spray about a half inch the first pass, about a half inch thick. Just kind of a small shot just to kind of get the dome foamed. Then you can go in and spray 1 inch at a time and foam it up. Another thing, gosh, what's that? Well, what I tell the new guys is they can measure it with buckets or something to kind of get their eyes to where they know where the level should be. And when you scoop it up, you can kind of see over the level of the bar. You'd be surprised how easy it is to stay accurate about how much to put in there.
You ever put a gauge in your hydraulic line to weigh it?
No, but we could do that. It would work really well if the Bobcat had a measuring gauge, right? No, we haven't looked into that.
If you need to be that close.
Yeah.
What distance would you spray your polyurethane?
About 3 or 4 or 5 feet, something like that. Not real far away.
What effect does humidity have?
On polyurethane?
Yeah.
That's like the number one enemy. Yeah. When it's raining outside, we can't spray.
What
the foam companies will recommend is that you stay, make sure that the temperature outside is 5 degrees away from the dew point. So you just look it up on weatherunderground.com or something like that. And generally, if you're about 5 degrees away from the dew point, then you're going to be pretty safe, as long as the airform feels dry to you. If it's like 1, 2 degrees, you know, then you know you got troubles, because as soon as you spray that hot foam on there, you're going to create moisture. So 5 degrees is what they say. They say if you spray it lower than that, then we won't warranty it, you know, which is pretty easy to come by. Yeah, it's just kind of by experience. But once you get about an inch or so on, what we can do is we just use one of those rebar hangers or a stiff piece of wire, just stick it in there, and you can measure the depth really pretty easy. After the guys have sprayed for a couple of years, they kind of have a good feeling. Like what we'll do is we'll spray a little bit. You know, I'll spray for 20 foot, and I'll go back and check it once. And, you know, if it's the right depth, then I'll just keep going at the same speed. And, yeah, I had one guy one time. We went to lunch, and he had poked like 1,000 holes in it because he wanted to make sure that we were right to the quarter of an inch. I just couldn't believe it. That guy was crazy. But he poked holes all in that thing. But I've not really seen a problem from the poking holes yet. You know, even on that guy's dome that poked all those holes, as long as we give it that flash coat over the end of it, you know, I've never seen any problems with them. On the depth, yeah, it's just kind of an experience thing. You know, shotcrete, we have the rebar there that can kind of give us a visual aid, you know, on the depth that we're spraying. That really helps a lot. Yeah, when you're spraying concrete, once you get kind of the rebar gets covered up, we'll spray a layer of concrete. And you see this in pools a lot. They'll go back and they'll trim it to the shape. And we always use grass whips. Grass whips like you, what do they call them? They call them, yeah, weed whackers, Mexican yo-yos. They're called all kinds of things, right? But those things work really well. And we have one that we used to buy all the time. And then all of a sudden, all the stores that we've been to just stopped carrying the good ones. Home Depot and all these stores. So we started selling them on our site. But they're just for trimming the concrete. Just after you get done spraying, you can see the little ribs. And you just go in there and shave the ribs off so that your next coat is on a smooth surface. Yeah, our hitch-mounted rebar bender. Some of the new things we're going to be doing is mounting that to the PAXA scaffold, which is not a big deal. We're just going to weld a receiver in the end of one of the tubes so we can bend the steel inside the dome. On which one? On the PAXIS? Yeah, on the PAXIS, there's just a little tiny just a knob that just 0 to 10 controls the speed.
Can the sprayer use it with his foot?
Yeah, you've got to have an extra guy in the dome all the time anyway. I mean, for safety reasons also, but you get the guy spraying on the scaffold, and there's a guy at the bottom watching the hoses and make sure the hoses are following the scaffold, and that guy can control the speed. Just by yelling at them or hand signals, something like that, you've got to have that extra guy in there. We looked into those kind of things, but the problem is the place you're spraying gets really dirty, you know, including you. It's another thing, we sell a lot of the clothing. Oh, that picture's not showing anymore, is it? Let me show you. That's showing the right one? You see these two guys up here in the scaffold? He's got that spray hat on. It's a terribly complicated device. The hard hat with some wire and a saran wrap on there. I've had all kinds of guys come in there try to reinvent that spray hat. We have too. It's just we haven't found a way that's better than that right there. The saran wrap, you just pull it down. You got a new looking, you know, a looking window. And then you see this guy getting sprayed off in the water and the snow on the ground. That is a dirty job. We sell a lot of the jackets and gloves and things. And what's fun is if you come down to our workshop, you get to get dirty. Go play in the mud. We're going to be spraying concrete on a fence tomorrow. So the pumps will be working. We'll have a pump out there working and the mixer and all that stuff. It'll be fun for you guys to see some guys spraying concrete. Any more questions? Yeah, air compressor rentals. You know, you can definitely rent air compressor. We do that most of the time, too. If we go very far, it's just cheaper to rent it and have it dropped off on the job site than it is to carry the thing. But a lot of our stuff is so custom, you know. An inflator you could buy and inflate the dome with. Foam, you could get somebody to come foam it for you. And then the shotcrete is really tough because if you hire one of these swimming pool guys to come and spray it, the chances are it'll look like H and that's a totally different world, you know. They use the same equipment, but they're spraying upside down and they're not really in mindset to make it look real pretty because everything they do, they scrape it off and it gets covered up, you know. And ours is what when we're done, that's what you see, you know, you have to live with it. So you'd have to find someone who's sprayed monolithic domes before, really. On the last passes, we will take out the aggregate, that's right. You know, we, on most of the domes we build, any domes that are, you know, below 50 foot, we don't even mess with aggregate. We use mostly just straight sand and cement. And that still gives us plenty of strength to build our domes with. Now, a lot of these pictures you saw on the slideshow there. How big do you have to be?
That too.
What did you say? How young do you have to be? Yeah. Well, I tell you something about spraying concrete, and you know, I've sprayed concrete for a long time, you know, and then I've got guys that come in that are just big old strapping dudes that'll just wear them right out. And it's not really how strong you are; it's just how many, how long you've practiced. You know, it's all about practice. Like, well, we spray concrete. There's lots of different ways, and like sometimes I'll strap them to myself, you know, tie it to my hips or hold it with my legs. You can't hold a concrete hose with your arms and expect to spray all day long. It'll kill you, you know. I use my legs most of the time. It's the way I always spray. I just use my legs to squeeze the hose, and I can spray all day long, you know, and it just takes a lot of practice. Also, you know, the first-time sprayers, they get real excited, and they're moving around a lot, you know, and after a while, you learn to just stand there, and, you know, it just takes a lot of practice. And it's not necessarily how strong you are, it's just... This is an eco shell where it was an eco shell 2, which means we spray it from the inside, only concrete. There's no insulation. And the wonderful power company shut the power off. They shut the power off and the dome sagged. You know, weren't sending the bill to the owner, so they just shut the power off. But so we went in there and decided, well, we're just going to have to break all the concrete off and start over again. You know, I was like, man, this ought to be pretty easy. Get a sledgehammer, just hit it, and it ought to just bust off. Well, the problem is we sprayed that monoform primer on here. And that stuff is like crazy glue. And we couldn't get that concrete off of there. Like the first layer, some of the layers would come off, but we had that flat hoe up there, and we ended up just poking holes in it. It's only got about an inch of concrete on there right now. When the dome's inflated, you can walk all over it. These things, put that air pressure is amazing how much. In fact, when we were kids, that's what we always did, is we would sit in the middle of the dome, they'd turn on the fans, and go to the top. It was really fun. Mostly aesthetics. It would be a little bit of structure, but mostly aesthetics, you know. We're talking like, you'd cut down the structural strength, but it's already a bomb shelter, you know. It's not a lot. I have a beautiful picture of some of the worst concrete I've ever seen. Where's that? Uh-huh. Here's another good thing about equipment right here. This guy, Larry Axline, wonderful guy. He is building his domes over there by himself, most of it. He's got us coming to do some of the stuff. Well, he used froth pack foam. I don't know if you guys know what that is, but basically it's like foam in a can, but a big old can. So, you know, it's like two little propane tanks, and it comes out this nozzle. Well, by the time he got done, he spent about as much money as it would have cost for me to come out there and foam it. And it was terrible. The foam was really weak, has no rigidity at all. I'm not sure about its insulation qualities, but I just don't see how it could be as good as a pure 2-pound polyurethane foam. This is an old peristaltic pump he had sitting out in the ditch. I have no idea where he came up with that thing. Sure was ugly looking. Look, got the same Honda motor though. This is just a roof, in our city. Yeah, it's no big deal. We foamed it. What's this? Look at that cool wig. You like that? It's cool, right? I got a lot of kids, so I get to do those fun things. No, I sold it. I've been sitting in the shed for too long. There's Jamie's colors. We'll zoom past that. So I'm a construction man, and... IT guy at our office. That's my server room. It's a fun plug. Huh? No, we don't have any of those right now. You know, you could buy one of those generators like they sell for your house to do that, but we haven't messed around with it too much. Most of the time we run multiple fans, and if we had a power failure, we always have a generator just right there. And how much time do you have during that time? You've probably got five minutes. So you got to be pretty fast, you know, but no, it's not long. I know a lot of these other guys, like Dome Technology, the guys that build the really big domes, they spend a lot of money on their inflators. I'm not sure how much safer they are. It actually has bit them a few times because they have things like that, you know, sensors and automatic things that just, the problem with those things is that they don't get used very often, and then they don't work when they're supposed to, you know, and they're complicated. That's That's kind of a big deal, is that, and that's something that I was going to put in here and I didn't. We also sell gauges for measuring air pressure and stuff, and they're not much to look at. Excuse me, I'm feeling on the mic. But they're simple. And again, for instance, Barry was building a dome one time and he had a manometer that was a store-bought manometer that measures inches of water column pressure. Well, they inflated the dome. Wasn't it 2 inches? So they put more pressure. So then it went up, and it still wasn't 2 inches. They put some more pressure. Ended up blowing a big old part of the footing off. Come to find out there had been some bees stuck up inside of there. And so the manometer was not reading the right pressure, you know. And so if they would have taken their $50 manometer and had a little tube of water, they would have seen the bees, you know. And that's another prime example of keep it simple, stupid. You know, we sell stuff that may not look real fancy, but it's the best thing we know to use, you know. And I had a guy, Jack Boyd, you know, another guy, was just an awesome guy, but he bought a couple of those manometers, you know. He goes, I want to use this manometer on my house. I said, that's great, you know. We put it up there, looked really cool, and then we put ours next to it. Because I heard the bee story, you know, and I don't have to live off the thing because I can't trust it, you know. This is a dome that we built in, this is Larry Axline's dome again. This is his house. That other thing was his garage. There's our crew. You'll get to meet those guys tomorrow. I mean, you don't have to put it up very high, you know. Just standard. Yeah, it's all real standard. Yeah. Yeah, most of the stuff is just, it's all real standard home construction. You'll get electricians that walk in the door and they'll be like, oh, I see, and they go to work, you know. And it's not. And you'll get some guys that are just confused as heck because they can't think outside of that box, some of them. Steel forms? Like drains? No, I haven't done any of those. We've done some steel forming, but not very much. Yeah, you know. Oh, right, right. I haven't got into those. I know they've got a lot of those really fancy forms nowadays that are metal. The problem is we keep changing gear so often. You know, we build a 50-foot dome, and we build an 80-foot dome on a stem wall, and the steel forms sit in the ditch for half a year, and they get all rusted. So we haven't spent the money on stuff like that. If we ever went to build 120-foot domes like these rentals, you know, then we'd probably be buying steel forms. But like I said, we try to stay light and nimble because we do so many different things. You know, we went to Florida one time and we really made the guy mad. Me and my buddy went up there and we put our foam trailer and we put our pump and mixer in the back of the truck. Drove all the way to Key West, Florida, and we rented the skid steer and we rented the air compressor. And we worked like 3-4 hour days. We were in Key West, you know, and we had this little 8-foot dome built in a week, you know. And we had bid the job way more than what we normally bid because it was so far away and it was an 8-foot dome. We really didn't want to do it. But we were the lowest bid. So we went over there and did it, you know. We had fun. We rented jet skis every day. And that guy was so mad because the other guys that had bid it had bid like 2 big trailers, and they needed all the space and all the weeks to do it, and they were going to have an 8-man crew, and here these 2 punk kids show up, and they're hardly ever there, and the dome just built itself, you know, and he was seriously mad at us, you know. It's like, and I said, well, consider it this way, you paid for knowledge, you know, you paid for the knowledge that nobody else could have come and done it like that. Half-inch plywood will pretty much form everything you need. And then sometimes we do the Europa-style domes, and they have that really sharp corner, and we'll just score the outside of it, and it'll bend real easy. Any more last-minute questions? No? All right. Thank you, guys. Thanks.